Thank you very much, Rav Judah. Rav Rosai, church colleagues. The Gemara says in Shabbos Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, and it's a Gemara which you have to know, because these are questions which everyone in this room is going to be asked. The Gemara says in Shabbos, B'shash Machnisim Adam, at the time you're taken for your judgment, Lachar Mev Esrim, when you're called above for that final judgment, they're going to be asked, begin by saying, the first question is, Nasata Natata Yamuna. Why don't we just try this?
Perfect. Perfect.
So you're going to be asked, were you faithful in your business dealings? Now you would imagine, prima facie, a more appropriate word would be, were you honest? Were you correct? Why is it the Amuna? Why were you faithful? Now, a better speaker would make a lot of drama and come to the answer 40 minutes from now. But we'll just cut straight to the chase. Because bottom line is, only you know. Only you know if you're selling a size 6 when it's 9 upside down. And only you know if you're a cardiologist how much you charge, because who can gauge how long you're in the operating theater? And if you're a tailor, how many stitches you put in? And when you're in a store and you buy items that are worth $350 and you take one more time and no one's looking, only things you know, that's an issue of emunah. It boils down to, do you have faith? And so I want to discuss this subject because ultimately this is a critical question. I can try it without the mic. The mic is better with the mic. All right. Okay, so there's a story, the story of the village thief. This is known in Yiddish as the Shtot Ganef. It seemed heavily laden with stolen items, heading directly to the rabbi's house. And as soon as the rav saw him coming, he ran away, locked the door and latched the windows, but it wasn't quick enough. Thief came in with all these stolen items. The rabbi said, what are you doing? What do you mean? What am I doing? What are you doing? What do you mean, what am I doing? Don't you remember? Remember what? Why, last Shabbos and Shul, he spoke about the mitzvah of returning stolen items. I'd known such a mitzvah. I'm all excited, my very first time. And the rabbi couldn't believe it. First of all, he couldn't believe anyone listened to what he said. But of all people, the village thief, he felt very amiss. He condemned him in the courtrooms of his mind. He wished him much success in a new career of integrity. He escorted him outside the door. And a few minutes later, the rabbi looked to see what time it is. But his watch was missing. Sneaking suspicion overcame him, ran down the block, encountered the village thief, said, tell me, did you steal my watch? Thief nodded, said sheepishly, yes. And the rabbi said, you know, I can't figure you out. Just a few minutes ago, he came to my house and said, you want to fill the misery, turn your stolen items. And then you go, steal my watch. Thief looked at him, total incredulity. I can't figure you out. One's a mitzvah, one's my parnasa. Whereas it's known in America, one's business, one's religion. And the sad thing about this story is one does not have to be a professional thief to be the protagonist of the story. Exposed as we are to a society which places enormous value on money, little value is placed on how the money is earned. In America, and to be fair, and in Canada, and in England, South America, and in South Africa, and in Belgium, and Australia, and I'm sure many other countries, the term success has but one connotation. He's, quote, successful. His marriage could be on the rocks. His children could be drug addicts, but has a fat bank book, he's successful. He's, quote, unsuccessful. He'd have a wonderful wife, his children adore him, but his borrow money is unsuccessful. And the sad thing is, when this begins to pollute our own connotations, I'll share with you a trenchant example. Two pension women met in Miami, haven't seen each other well over 20 years, and one said to the other, how's your daughter Deborah? I'm married to the doctor. Oh, she divorced him, I'm sorry. No, but then she married a lawyer. Oh, mazel tov. No, but she divorced him as well. This woman felt terrible, she even broached the subject, but afterwards, she married an architect and said, so much nachas from one kid. If our values are distorted, you take a turn like nachas, which should always mean parents driving pleasure from children, and you pollute that, this is our problem. If we are rudderless, if term of words acquire meaning, if success means only monetary success, there has to be an arrow of angst, a prick of consciousness to know that if you're doing something which is wrong, that indeed it's wrong. The world has a remarkable toleration level for shtick. And since everything is permitted in the name of earning parnasa, since everything's permitted, then
like the story. The king of Prussia went to visit a jail. I must tell you, there is a dynamic tuba movement in prisons, and I have a modest role. On often occasion, I go to prisons and tell stories to prisoners. Very captive audience they are. No buses to catch or movies to miss. And every time I go to jail, I am amazed that there is no one in jail that I've met who's guilty. Only society is guilty, prisoner after prisoner. Now, when I visit jail, I must tell you, I have no idea what American jail is like. I have in my mind's image of, you know, lacerations, tattoos, crossing skull bones. But you go to an Israeli prison, you are overwhelmed with curiosity. What did they do? They look like such boychikos. I mean, they can't all be there for jaywalking and littering. Well, what did they do? But Chazal have taught us, you may not remind a sinner of the past misdeeds. I'm presupposing doing tshuva, so don't ask them. I was once with a friend of mine, a little less sensitive. This is in a maximum security prison. He asked the fellow, what are you doing here? The fellow was there for homicide, he said. I don't know. I got into an argument with a fellow, and Pete Dome, suddenly he died. I had a story. The king of Prussia went to visit a jail. He asked all the prisoners, what are you doing here? And each and every prisoner said, I'm innocent. Society is guilty. Prisoner after prisoner after prisoner. He finally came to the very last jailer and said, what are you doing here? And this prisoner confessed and conceded, I committed a heinous crime, and now I'm finally getting my just desserts. As soon as the king heard this, he said, this man must be immediately released from prison. He has no business being with all these other innocent individuals. So there has to be a prick of consciousness, an arrow of angst to know that if we do something wrong, that it's incorrect, even though it's in the sake of money. There was a boy from the Gateshead Yeshiva. Gateshead is in northern England. Mastein Abramsky, is that name familiar to you? Abramsky? The problem is you don't read enough Teller books, but it's rectifiable. Dain Abramsky is one of the Gedolei Ador, passed away 31 years ago. And he got the title Dain Abramsky because when he became, after he was released from Siberia, he became the head of the London Bez, and hence Dain Abramsky. And he made his job contingent on the fact he had total control of all kashrut in London. One of the butchers did not take kindly to this, such strict control, and he summoned him to court. I don't think they did, I mean secular court. They warned Dain Abramsky, who was a very determined, forceful individual. He would pound his fist on the table often and raise his voice. If you raise your voice in court, the judges will flip their wigs, literally and figuratively, because in England they were shaitels in court. So they warned him, and when I prepared my book on Dain Abramsky, I went through the court proceedings, and the judges wrote, albeit this court is not accustomed to hearing old tiger roar so loudly, we must unequivocally rule that he is correct. At one point in the court proceeding, the judge asked Dain Abramsky, who is the greatest Talmudic authority alive? He said, I am. The judge said, what about humility? He said, yes, Your Honor, but I'm under oath. In any event, a boy approached me and asked Michelle about an airline ticket. Now, those of us who travel, know there's probably no area more rife with shtick than airline tickets. So much drache maybe you can do. Dain Abramsky's eyes narrowed and focused on the boy and said, I shan't answer your shayla. But I can show you something askew about your learning. Because you can't learn Torah and ask a shayla about how to steal. Doesn't go. The Gemara says in the beginning of Basra, that once a man came comatose, died, and then was later revived. And everyone gathered around. For here's a man who came back from the dead. He said, What did you see? And he said, Olam hafuchos, where he says, an upside down world. I saw the Yonim are the Tachtonim, and the Tachtonim are the Yonim. Those you imagine to be above are in fact below, and the below are in fact above. So this in Alper's Chol Aruch explained like this, and just putting my own, his idea of my words. Someone donates $1 million to Yeshiva. Now $1 million is a fortune. Keep Yeshiva going for a long time. Someone else donates $10. $10, I mean, that's 3 bottles of ketchup. But it could be, it could be that the one who donated $1 million had many of those millions, and he didn't feel the loss. And the one who donated $10 had to dig very deep into his pockets to make up that donation, Normally thought to be above's intact below. Below's intact above. Someone learns the entire Shas, a stupendous accomplishment. Someone else learns a few Mishnayos. This we could all do. But it could be, that the one who learned a few Mishnayos had to break, he had a very weak head, he had to break that head to learn those few Mishnayos. And the one who learned the entire Shas is imbued with incredible intellect and burning diligence, and this is what is expected from him. And the one we thought to be above is in fact below. Below is in fact above. I submit to you, our greatest challenge, and this is where the moon really kicks in. Do we think we're above when in fact we're below? 14 years ago, every Friday night we'd have a guest from the Kotel. We call them walnuts. And 14 years ago, I brought him a girl off the wall. Brought her for a meal, it'll take a little bit longer, but anyways. Picked up this girl at the Kotel, asked her, what are you doing? She told me she's a nurse. I'm trying to highlight to you how our image of ourselves can be so distorted. So she told me she's a nurse. Now, I'm not the most astute individual, but everything about this woman seemed very unnurse-like. I don't mean like she wasn't running around the house making corners, but my whole image of a nurse was not fulfilled in this woman. So I asked her, where'd you go to nursing school? And she began to hem and haw. I said, where do you practice? And she's fudging. Finally, I said to her, Cindy, what kind of nurse are you? And this was 14 years ago. She said, well, I'm a cabbage patch nurse. Meaning, she posed in pictures, put thermometers in dolls' mouths, and for this she called herself a nurse. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a neurosurgeon. If our image is distorted, how can we ever rectify? If we do something which is wrong, do you not have enough faith to recognize what is incorrect? We have to first come to grips with being man enough to admit what we're doing is wrong. The story comes to mind in this regard. You know that all the perspicacious, perspicuous, judicious, private, and erudite, clairvoyant, sagacious individuals live in Chelm. But in my mind, you know, Chelm is the home of the fools, but mine is a very insightful story. You know that clothing identifies an individual. The story goes that a man in Chelm had to go to the bathhouse, and he was very concerned that without his clothing, he'd forget who he was. To assuage this problem, he tied a red string around his toe, so that this way, even without his clothing, he'd remember who he was. However, somehow, as he's taking a shower, the string got dislodged off his foot and ended up on someone else's toe. He came out of the shower and he said, I know who you are, but who am I? That's precisely our problem. For galvanized one another, what other people think and other people say. We don't have a Torah baseline of what's right and what's proper, and have the emunah, then how can we ever be correct? Now, ideally, our ability to do that which is right and that which is wrong should be internal. We should have some internal barometer which tells us that which is right and that which is wrong. It's there, but sometimes society has dimmed it. Rav Shel Salanter, is that name familiar to you? Some of you? More than some. Is everybody awake? It looks actually looks pretty good. It looks very good. I think I never looked so good. They must have coffee or something. I don't know what they're doing, but they must have snacks afterwards. Really, guys are great. Shel Salanter was the granddad of the Mussar movement. And one Friday night, people call him Rabbi Salanter. His last name is Lipkin. He came from the town of Salant. People call from where they came from. So he was in Kovna, which happened very often, not far from Salant. And a balabas invited to the house for the Friday night meal. And when he walked into the home, the host noticed that the challah wasn't covered. He called out yidne, which isn't a very nice term. His wife came scampering out, and he said, why isn't the challah covered? He said, but it becomes so fast. I was just about to cover it, but it becomes so fast. I didn't get a chance. Well, you better hurry up. She scampered out and said, Rishon Salam, to tell me, why did you cover the challah? And he looked this look of incredulity. You're the famous Elazar Salanter, why everyone knows. He went to the sing so cheer from Cheder. Everyone knows you really should make Kiddush on challah. The challah of a brother making Kiddush on wine. Since you should make the Kiddush on challah, not the wine, you cover the challah, not the virus, the challah, make the Kiddush on the wine. Said Rishon Salanter, listen with your ears to what your mouth has just said. We go to great length and trouble not to embarrass bread. Meal, dough. What about your wife, spouse, flesh and blood, the woman you love? Her you can shame? Which is why it has to be internal. I must tell you, I travel very often. Very often. And I find it incredible. I go to people's homes for Shabbos, and everything's very beautiful and nice, and the carpet's vacuumed, and the table is sparkling. The challah's covered, and the father's making fun of his kids. I don't get it. You don't want to embarrass the challah, but you're making fun of it. It should be internal, it should be natural. That's the way it's supposed to be. Now, the primordial example of integrity, who is the Torah example of honesty? Tzvi? Has to be a Tzvi here. Josh? No Josh? You must be Joshing. Josh, who's the Torah example of integrity? Pardon me? You sound speechless. You do know, but at this moment you can't remember. Right. Anybody else? Yes. I'd say maybe Warren, but incorrect. Yes.
Yaakov.
Yaakov, you know. Titan endlessly Yaakov. Yaakov is the source of integrity. And Avram is the source of chesed, and Yaakov is of integrity. Okay, now I'll tell you a principle. The principle is that good midot are genetic. I can tell you as a teacher, I know the good boys are the good daddies. That's just the way it is. When I became a chassan, when I got engaged, Chaim Shmuel Levitt said to me, he told me, your kala, Ziza Mitzuyene, she's a wonderful girl. Now, we already had the chutzpah, but I said to Rosh Yeshiva, I'm showing the Rosh Yeshiva, I said, Rosh Yeshiva doesn't even know her. I said, I ken the tata, I know the father. Good to me is to get the rein and the beiner, good midot, good attributes, good characteristics. They go into the blood and through the bones. So if Yaakov is a source of integrity, safe to assume this characteristic went over to his children. Based on this, I wish to explain to you a pasuk in the Torah, which I never understood until Rav Schwab explained to me the name of the Brisker Rav. Listen carefully. We all know, it's coming up in the Parsha soon, that when Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, pardon me, when the Shvatim, well, my point was, good midos are genetic, therefore safe to assume, Yaakov is a source of integrity, safe to assume that his sons, the Shvatim, had that same integrity. But does anybody know how to say integrity in Yiddish? Here's a word worth learning. The word is Ehrlichkeit, and it's the finest compliment you can say. A frum yid means a religious Jew, a fry yid means not yet from, and Ehrlich means your word is your word, your honesty, your integrity is above reproach. It's the finest compliment you can say. Ehrlich yid, an Ehrlich person. So, Jacob's children go down to Mitzrayim. These are people that were very well endowed in integrity. They pay for food. I know you all know, I'm just repeating the story. They pay for the food, and they're leaving Mitzrayim. They discover that the money had been reinserted in their saddlebags. What's their reaction when they discover this? Featured right there in the world's bestseller. I refer not to Harry Potter. What does Harry say when they discover the money? What's the reaction? Fired? What?
Scared?
Scared is not the word. They're quivering and shrek and shrekking. Yeah, what a shrek. So what's the shrek? Explain to Rav Schwab and name of this girl. Listen carefully. According to these giants of spirit, children of Yaakov Avinu, so well endowed in integrity, according to the holy calculation, they paid for food, and they received the food, and the money was returned, comes out. They stole. And for this, they were quivering and quaking. Are you with me? Let me make this realistic to you. What would happen? Put a quarter in a payphone. I'm sorry. Boys and girls, boys. Once upon a time, many, many years ago, when your grandparents were little children, there was a thing called payphones. Did you ever see this in a movie? On your neighbor's TV? No, you don't know what I'm referring to. Looks like a one-armed bandit. Does this work? Do you really know that once upon you weren't cell phones? Am I connecting? What?
Adam in school.
Payphones? Really? Okay.
Kansas.
He's from Kansas. Anyway, what would happen, pretend, you know, going back in time, what would happen if you put a quarter in a payphone and $40 in change would come pouring out? How would you feel? Quivering and quaking? Or like putting in another quarter. Bonanza. I can tell you a story which happened to me. It's not worth repeating, but I'll tell it to you nonetheless. I used to be, you're not going to believe this. A real nisayon of integrity was, it used to be, when you make a phone call from a public payphone, at the end of the call, the operator would call you up, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, please deposit 30 more cents, because you went overtime. That was a real nisayon. You don't see her, she doesn't see you, you could walk away. I'll tell you a story. When I was a little boy, I got off Grand Central Station in New York. I'm walking up 42nd Street towards the library. At the corner of Lexington and 42nd, the buses leave for the airport. There's a payphone on the corner. Phone was ringing. I was a little kid. I still remember when I answered the phone. Hello, Manhattan? And the operator guy said, please deposit 45 more cents. And I felt so guilty, I almost, which is why it's not worth repeating, deposited the 45 cents. But we had these trials all the time. I'll tell you a story which just happened. Just happened. I was driving out to Long Island on Friday, this past Friday, and I passed by a mall, and I bought some stuff, being Israeli, I bought stuff for me. And Motzei Shabbos, as I was packing, I flew back to Israel on Sunday. As I was packing, I saw that the belt, which I purchased, was not in the list. In other words, I didn't pay for it. So Sunday morning, I called up Macy's, and I figured, I mean, I knew how much it cost, but if I send a check to the store, it's not going to go anywhere. I figured it was smarter to speak to the manager. So I'm telling you a story, which is over 2 days old. So I asked to speak to the manager. The guy came out, his name is Paul Carboni. And I said, I purchased the belt, and I see from the receipt that I didn't pay for it, so I want to pay for it. He said, you want that buying again? See, I bought items, and one of the things I purchased was a belt, but it didn't register, so therefore I owe you money, and I don't want to just send it to the store. I'd like to send it. Can I send the check directly to you? He said, what? So I told him again, and he said, oh. He said, no. I said, what? And he said, what the f-? He said, he said, oh, yeah, sure. He said, just cut out the barcode, send it in this week, we can track it, and we'll be able to take care of inventory. But like, he just so far beyond him. But if we have the emunah, if we understand that what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. And this is the thing that could be so destructive in a dormitory. People taking liberties. Yeah, he doesn't, you know, take it in. You go, the Rambam says, v'hatarach kamocha, means that you care about someone else's money. So you brought from yourself from America your fancy glancy shampoo. Give me a minute, what's a fancy shampoo? What? Head and Shoulders. That's fancy?
Pantene.
I've even used it, what?
Pantene.
So, you know, you take, that's fancy? Yeah. You just use a little bit. You go to someone's house for shower, you see a Pantene, go, well, I don't know if you do that, but, you know, that's a violation of Hatzorach HaKamocha. Yours, you're sparing, someone else's, you're so generous. It could really ruin life in a dormitory to take liberties of taking things which aren't yours. And I'm going to get to the punchline in just a moment, how this all connects. Okay. Every action has two sets of consequences, internal and external. Basically, people are concerned only about the external. How does it appear? Was anybody hurt? There's always an internal as well. Are you becoming a more virtuous person or a more malicious person by what you've done? And as you may think it's innocuous to pocket paper clips at the office, and make phone calls and the boss is dying, and to take perks which don't belong to you, but not only are you doing taking some just in yours, but you're also doing inner destruction on your spiritual infrastructure. When I speak in day schools to high school students, I ask them, why do we have to do mitzvot? And they always give me the same answer, to be good. I say, how do you define good? I could do this to you also. How do you define good? And they tell me good means not hurting someone. That's not a good answer. The answer is not hurting someone. Because if you don't hurt someone, you're merely not bad. But good is far more than that. That's why all secular law is negative. Don't speak, don't kill, don't steal. And we have so many positive commandments. Visit the sick, give charity. It's not just negativistic to prevent a society of one person eating another person. The other question I always ask is, Lo tamar odam reyecha means you can't stand by your brother's blood. So what would happen if you're walking past the lake, and you see your dog drowning in the lake and a stranger drowning in the lake? Who would you save first? 8 out of 10 people tell me they'd save the dog first. One thing I learned from this is I will never go swimming in a lake if I see a dog there. Therefore, The Torah is very concerned about every single detail. We have trials and temptations in many areas. And this is really the lesson of Shosalanta. There is a shochet. I thought Shosalanta then doesn't want to be shochet anymore. He said, why not? I can't take the shilas. Being a shochet means, you know, maybe I didn't kasher properly, and I'll cause something food which isn't kosher. He said, what's your alternative? I want to be a businessman. He said, what? You're worried about what's only one aveira. Kol aveira lo tocheli. You're not allowed to eat something which is not kosher. But in business, do you know how many shilas there are? And that's what many have said, you know, you can't be a shochet unless you have Kabbalah to give to Shechita. And it can't be a rav till you pass Yerudera. And the irony is, people go into business without having proper smicha of all the shilos of mas and matan and integrity. Okay, so what I want to do is conclude. Rapam Zchonavacha, the great Rashid from Tarbadas, he wrote, I have the book of integrity, very introduction. He mentioned three things to bear in mind. What is it? Here we go. Defective goods. Now you might think that this is only pertinent to a shopkeeper. Not true. Comes the end of the year, and you're going to sell your toaster oven or sandwich maker or whatever it is. If there's a defect in it, you know, it's like selling a car. Only you know what the problems are. If you don't point out what the problem is and it's defective, it's a very serious shaila of Gneva. Not even serious. Not like Gneva. Customer responsibility. If you go into a store and you damage an item, by the way, this is invariable. If you, for Americans it's very shocking, but you come to Israel for the first time, you walk to the grocery store and you see eggs just out in a tray, and especially if you go shopping with kids, invariably you're going to make omelets. So you owe the shopkeeper for the eggs you destroyed. But the thing which I find very strange, I'm being nice with my words, as you all know, for a lulav to be kosher, the middle leaf must be joined together. I see this every year, it's appalling. I see people going over to the stall, pulling the leaves apart to see if they're joined together. Once they determine they're not together, puzzle, they look for the next one. They owe the stallman for the lulav who just puzzled. You guys with me? Use responsibility. If you damage an item, you have to pay for it. And then, what I'm telling you is just for everybody. And then lastly, naming a price. People don't like to talk about money. But the fact of the matter is, the only way you can avoid a shiloh, in the initial meeting, people don't want to talk about with the contractor or whoever it is. You get into a taxi, ask him how much is the ride going to be. He said, don't worry, we'll work it out. You know you're going to have an argument. And what does an argument mean? The argument means that one person may be stealing from the other person. There's going to be anger, which could result in lashon hara and nivopeh, and anger, letis nechicha b'levecha. So no matter what, whenever you get involved with someone, best thing you can do is write it down. And there's nothing to feel bad about. On the contrary, this is the way you have a peaceful relationship. If you just say after to work it out, you're going to be arguments. Because everyone always feels that they were the one more, that was more fair, more generous, and therefore name the price in advance. Let me conclude by telling you a story. And then I'll tell you the ultimate punchline. There were some eagles that were soaring above the trees, the grass, the clouds, the water. Swimming into the air, and one of the eagles developed a snap in its wing. And he circled below to assess the damage. He lay in the middle of a chicken coop, just went blop, 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 and down into the ground. The eagle was highly offended, and he was ashamed from these chickens. He didn't want to be associated with such foul. He distanced himself. But after a little while, he sought companionship. He got hungry. He moved over a little bit. And he started inserting his beak down into the ground, just like the chickens. And a little while later, you couldn't notice the difference in his behavior and that of the chickens. He's going blop, 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 up and down into the ground. 1 year later, again, the eagles were migrating, circling the trees, the grass, the clouds, the water. One looked down and said, hey, that's one of us down there. They formed a posse, circled below, and they went over to the eagle and they said, sometimes these things come to me. They went over to the eagle and they said, Reb Eagle, they said, Reb Eagle, how's your fleagle? He said, I'm not an eagle, I'm a chicken. You're not a chicken, you're an eagle. I'm an eagle, I'm a chicken. You're not a chicken, you're an eagle. I'm an eagle, I'm a chicken. You're not a chicken, you're an eagle. I'm an eagle, I'm a chicken. You're not an eagle, you're an eagle. I'm an eagle, I'm a chicken. But you're not, but I am, but you're not, but I am. But you're not, but I am, but you're not, but I am. I can prove that you're not. How do you prove that I'm a chicken? Look at them, and look at you. Taka, you're right. You still flap your wings, oh, I can't do it. You have to flap quicker, quicker, higher. Because we can't soar above. And even if everyone has to beat down the ground, God can come chiseling away. We've been a joy from the time that we have to soar above. We are maintaining to have this emunah, an understanding of the commandment that if we take from someone else, it's not ours to take. I understand that God awards that which is right to each person. Okay, and to conclude, the thing which is beyond the pale, I wish I could say this with come out the sincerity I feel towards this. But the critical thing is what's beyond the pale for any Ben Torah. We have all kinds of problems. We're too loose with our tongues, too much lashon hara, a little bit too clever. But really the pale, the bottom line is for Ben Torah is one thing which should never ever be considered is gezel shena, is disturbing someone's sleep. You live in a dormitory and someone had a reason why I wish to go to sleep, you have no right to disturb that sleep. And if you do, it's outmouth thievery. Because if I steal your money, I can always replace it. But gezel shena, stealing sleep, can never be replaced. It's irrevocable. And you can never get it back. It's beyond the pale for a Bentor, it's unthinkable. I tell my students I teach in seminaries that you're dating a boy after Pesach, and you're out in you're in a residential area and he's talking loudly, problem. Who wants to marry a chicken thief? A robber. That's what it is. So really just, if Chalila is such a problem in the dormitory, from now on, just, it cannot be. I know nothing. I'm not looking at you. I'm just telling you. There's no place among B'nai Torah for Gezel Shema. A person has a right to sleep, but sleep cannot be disturbed. Okay, so thank you very much. I have, if anyone's interested, I have a few books on integrity of will with me. Thank you.